We'll be speaking from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 5. We'll be reading text 21, which is on the board, and we'll also be going through text 22 and, all the way through 24, actually. So, karmavadatam etate. Karmavadatam etate gayanti svastriyo muhuhu gayanti svastriyo muhuhu kirtim parama punyam cha kirtim parama punyam cha kirtayeshyati bhur iyam Kirtiyashati bhur iyam. Prabhuji's. Karma vadatam etate. Gayanti svastriyo muhuhu. Kirtim padama punyam cha. Kirtiyashati bhur iyam. Karma vadatam etate gayanti svastriyo muhuhu kirtim padama punyam cha kirtayashyati bhur iyam karma vadatam etate Gayanti svastriyo muhuhu Kirtim parama punyam cha Kirtiyashati bhuriyam Matajis Karma vadatam etate Gayanti svastriyo muhuhu Kirtim padama punyam cha Kirtiyashati bhur iyam Karma vadatam etate Gayanti svastriyo muhuhu Kirtim padama punyam cha Kirtiyashati bhur iyam Itate Gayanti svastriyo muhuhu Kirtim padama punyam cha Kirtiyashati bhur iyam Okay, so let's go through the word for words. Karma, activity, avadatam, without any tinge. Etat, all this. Te, your. Gayanti, will sing. Svastriyaha, women from the heavenly planets. Muhuhu, always. Kirtim, glories. Padamapunyam, highly glorified and pious. Cha, also. Kirtiyashati will continuously chant. Buhu, the whole world. Iyam, this. Prabhupada's translation. All the blessed women in the heavenly planets will continuously chant about your spotless character at every moment, and the people of this world will also chant your glories continuously. Please repeat after me. All the blessed women in the heavenly planets will continuously chant about your spotless character at every moment. And the people of this world will also chant your glories continuously. So we'll move on to text 22. Shri Shuka Uvacha Evam Sinkirti Rajanam Durvasa Paritoshitaha Yayau Vihaya Sammantriya Brahma Lokam Ahoitakam. Translation, Shri Shukadev Goswami continued, thus being satisfied in all respects, the great mystic yogi Durvasa took permission and left, continuously glorifying the king. Through the skyways he went to the Brahma Loka, which is devoid of agnostics and dry philosophical speculators. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Although Durvasa Muni went back to Brahma Loka through the spaceways, he did not need an airplane, for great mystic yogis can transport themselves from any planet to any other planet without any machine. There is a planet named Siddhaloka whose inhabitants can go to any other planet because they naturally have all the perfection of yoga practice. Thus, Durvasa Muni, the great mystic yogi, could go through the skyways to any planet, even to Brahmaloka. In Brahmaloka, everyone is self-realized, and thus there is no need of philosophical speculation to come to the conclusion of the absolute truth. Durvasa Muni's purpose in going to Brahmaloka was apparently to speak to the residents of Brahmaloka about how powerful a devotee is and how a devotee can surpass every living entity within this material world. The so-called jnanis and yogis cannot compare to a devotee. Om Agyan Timidandhasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shiguro Shiuta Patikamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Saganaraganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadhutam Brijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Saganalalata Shri Vashakan Vitamscha Hey Krishna, Kuruna Sando, Dinabandhu Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostate, Tapta Kanchana Godangi, Radhe Brindavaneshwari, Vrishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye, Vanchakalpadadubhyascha, Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha, Patitanam Bhavane Bhyo, Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhunityananda, Shedvaita Gadadhara Srivasari Guru Bhaktavarinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Archita Prabhu gave me permission to continue on to text 24. Both of these purports I will speak about. So in text 23, Samvatsaro Tyagat Tavat Yavata Nagatogataha Munistad Darshana Kangsho Raja Bhaksho Babhuvaha. Durvasa Muni had left the place of Maharaj Ambarish, and as long as he had not returned for one complete year, the king had fasted, maintaining himself simply by drinking water. Text 24. Gate ta durvasasi so mbarisho dvijo payo gati pavitram abharat risher vimoksham vyasanam cha viksha minesva viryam cha padanubhavan. Translation. After 1 year, when Durvasa Muni had returned, King Ambarish sumptuously fed him all varieties of pure food, and then he himself also ate. When the king saw that Brahman Durvas had been released from the great danger of being burned, he could understand that by the grace of the Lord, he himself was also powerful. But he did not take any credit, for everything had been done by the Lord. And Srila Prabhupada's purport is a very beautiful purport. A devotee like Maharaj Ambarish is certainly always busy in many activities. Of course, this material world is full of dangers that one has to meet, but a devotee, because of his full dependence on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is never disturbed. The vivid example is Maharaj Ambarish. He was the emperor of the entire world and had many duties to perform. And in the course of these duties, there were many disturbances created by persons like Durvasa Muni. Excuse me, but the king tolerated everything, patiently depending fully on the mercy of the Lord. The Lord, however, is situated in everyone's heart, sarvasya chaham ridisana vishta, and he manages things as he desires. Thus, although Maharaj Ambarish was faced with many disturbances, the Lord, being merciful to him, managed things so nicely that in the end, Durvasa Muni and Ambarish Maharaj Ambarish, became great friends and parted cordially on the basis of bhakti yoga. After all, Durvasa Muni was convinced of the power of bhakti yoga. although he himself was a great mystic yogi. Therefore stated by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 6:47, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatenan tadatmana shadavan bhajate yomam sami yuktattamo mataha. Of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. Thus it is a fact that a devotee is the topmost yogi, as proved in the dealings of Maharaj Ambarish with Durvasa Muni. So here, Srila Prabhupada in the purport, he mentions that Maharaj Ambarish is a vivid example. So a vivid example, what this means is that it's something that should really stand out in our mind. It should create an impression in our mind. It's something that we should hold on to as an example. There may be examples of other behavior. There may be individuals, even Vaishnavas, who may not behave in the same way as Maharaj Ambarish. But Maharaj Ambarish stands out. His example is meant to actually be taken up by us and utilized to change our life. Right? In other words, Prabhupada's making it clear in these purports that Maharaj Ambarish is an example for us, and he's a necessary example. We have to actually develop his consciousness. Okay? So what is his consciousness? As Prabhupada points out here, in this material world, as you try to be active, as you try to do things in this material world, there's going to be opposition. All of us have experienced this, I'm sure. Right? Even if you're performing material activities, if you're running a business or something like that, there's so much opposition. As soon as you try to move the material energy, it's almost like Maya assembles an army to stop you, right? Everything you try to do, even you try to just drive down the street, and there's so much opposition from all the other people. So this material world, the nature is that as soon as you try to do something, others will just sort of rise out of the woodwork to try to stop you. And especially for devotees of Krishna, especially for those members of the Krishna consciousness movement, Prabhupada has actually told us to act very intensely in the material world. He's told us to take on a tremendous amount of responsibility and try to move the material energy for Krishna. This is a preaching movement. So there will be tremendous opposition to our activities. Right? So Prabhupada is giving us the gift of knowledge here. He's telling us what consciousness we can adopt as we face this opposition that will allow Krishna to enter into our activities and empower us. Right? Allow Krishna to, in a sense, come into the situation and fulfill his will. We may have ideas about what we think, you know, should be done for Krishna, but Krishna may have his own ideas. And if we are free from false ego, Krishna can actually work through us to accomplish what his particular desires may be. And the results are often miraculous. So as we see here, this is a great miracle. The yogi Durvasa Muni, who was previously not behaving properly, he's actually come to understand not just the realization of how great devotional service is and how great the Vaishnavas are, but he's come to realize his own position as a yogi, that actually the devotees are the topmost yogis. And it's interesting because in the previous purport, Prabhupada is mentioning how, you know, Durvasa Muni, he's flying through the airways glorifying Maharaj Ambarish, and then he goes to Brahmaloka, which is not a place where they try to figure out the absolute truth. They already understand the absolute truth there. Prabhupada mentioned there's no philosophical speculators. It's a place of pure practice and sort of coming to the Supreme. And so here, Durvasa Muni, I'm sure he has this reputation throughout the universe. Here he comes arriving through the airways in Brahmaloka, and they're all sitting in meditation, and he's just like weeping and glorifying the Vaishnavas, you know, from this tremendous experience he's had. And so as he arrives, you know, he begins glorifying devotional service as the topmost yoga system. It's pretty amazing. And actually, Prabhupada mentions in this purport that you can imagine the tension that Durvasa Muni was creating with Maharaj Ambarish. But here, he says they left on the cordially as friends on the basis of bhakti yoga. This means, you know, it was like vancha kalpa dudubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha. You know, we can imagine that they're showing each other great love and respect. And Durvasa Muni has been purified and brought to a higher level of realization. So this is actually by the grace of Krishna. This was the plans of Krishna. And because Maharaj Ambarish was free of false ego, Krishna was able to work in the circumstance and create this amazing situation. So this is also what we need to do in our lives to the best of our ability. So what was that consciousness of Maharaj Ambarish? Well, Prabhupada mentions here two things. He was extremely tolerant and he was fully dependent on Krishna. So, actually Prabhupada mentions this dependence on Krishna twice. So Prabhupada of course gives Maharaj Ambarish as a vivid example. I would like to give Prabhupada himself as a vivid example. In fact, if I may share just a late realization that I've had in reading Prabhupada's purports, is that he's really giving his personal realizations. And when Prabhupada speaks, he's not just speaking some theoretical philosophy, he's actually telling us what his personal practice is. And so the way Prabhupada really emphasizes dependence on Krishna in these purports, it's clear to me that Prabhupada himself was always dependent on Krishna. There's like not a moment that went by when Prabhupada wasn't always praying to Krishna and asking for his mercy, for Krishna to enter in and use him as an instrument. And Prabhupada is also extremely tolerant. If you read the Lilamrita, we could see how much Prabhupada had to tolerate. Not just from non-devotees who were very envious and challenging the movement, but even from devotees, even from godmothers, even from disciples. So Prabhupada displayed a tremendous amount of tolerance and compassion and humility. And as we said, always depending on Krishna. I had the recent good fortune, well, I guess spiritual good fortune, of traveling to New York and we had a layover in Boston. So I was able to kind of look out over the harbor and read Prabhupada's prayers when he first arrived in the United States at the Jaladuta. And he was sort of parked at the Boston Commonwealth Pier, which is still there. I just wanted to read a couple verses from that prayer and let's try to meditate on this and get an idea of Prabhupada's mood of dependence, how he was really, really just fully resting upon Krishna's goodwill. Right? Prabhupada says here, this is from the end of the prayer, "Somehow or other, O Lord, you have brought me here to speak about you. Now, my Lord, it is up to you to make me a success or failure as you like." You see, Prabhupada's not attached to success or failure. He's just here being an instrument of Krishna. And what is he an instrument of? To speak about Krishna. He says, "O spiritual master of all the worlds, I can simply repeat your message. So if you like, you can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. Only by your causeless mercy will my words become pure. I am sure that when this transcendental message penetrates their hearts, they will certainly feel engladdened and thus become liberated from all unhappy conditions of life." Now, we also have to understand what was Prabhupada seeing. When he first came into Boston, his realization wasn't, "Oh wow, look how beautiful this place is. You know, let me buy a postcard or something like that." No, he was actually thinking, "Oh my God, how am I going to do this? Huh? Oh my Govinda, how am I going to do this?" Right? These people are completely covered by passion and ignorance. We can imagine looking at Boston Pier, you know, with all the workers and everything. So how am I going to introduce Krishna Katha into these people, into these Yavanas and Mlechas, and actually uplift them and purify them into Vaishnavas? Prabhupada just left Vrindavan. Right? How am I going to make this place into Vrindavan? This is incredible. Therefore, he's crying out, "Krishna, please, with all of his heart, with all of his strength, you please make me an instrument. I have no power to do this on my own." So he says, "O Lord, I am just like a puppet in your hands. So if you have brought me here to dance, then make me dance. Make me dance, O Lord. Make me dance as you like." Now notice Prabhupada is also saying, "as you like." Meaning Krishna has his personal desires. Prabhupada's just here to satisfy those desires. Just make me an instrument. It's not that I know, or you might say, I'm the arbitrator of what Krishna has his desires. No, I'm just developing these qualities of dependence and tolerance and compassion, and I'm just depending on you to use me to fulfill your desires. All right? Now, of course, we should understand that Prabhupada wasn't just sitting back smoking a bidi, Prabhupada mentions, you know, Arjuna didn't just sit on the chariot and smoke a bidi and ask Krishna to do everything. No. Prabhupada was acting with, as he says in the Bhagavad Gita, very daring and active. In other words, he has the order of the spiritual master, Vyavasatmaka Buddhi, Ekeha Kurunandana, and he is working with tremendous force and working with great power and energy and with great expertise and skill to move the material energy. But at the same time, while acting with that force, he's also fully surrendered to Krishna and dependent on Krishna. So both of those things have to be there. So continuing, he says, I have no devotion, nor do I have any knowledge, but I have strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. I have been designated as Bhaktivedanta, and now, if you like, you can fulfill the real purport of Bhaktivedanta. So just a small point here we don't want to miss. Prabhupada says, I have strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. Right? So how is he dependent on Krishna? He's chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, crying out to Krishna in desperation, calling out to Radha and Krishna, please engage me in your service. I am just your humble servant. Please make me an instrument. I'm fully dependent upon you. And again, practicing tremendous tolerance. You see, because as, you know, he's putting forth this great effort with dependence on Krishna, but there's going to be so many obstacles. Immediately, a great war will be launched against you by Maya Devi as soon as you try to establish Krishna's will in this world. As soon as you try to give the conditioned souls another choice, right? Then all the forces of this material world marshal against you, all of the envy, all of the hatred. And so, therefore, a great amount of tolerance must be practiced. We see examples such as Haridas Thakur, a tremendous amount of tolerance. So these things are there. Prabhupada also mentioned that this Krishna consciousness movement, it cannot be stopped from the outside. Is actually what the only thing that can really stop this Krishna consciousness movement, which Krishna will act through, which Krishna will use as a puppet, as an instrument, is ourselves. Right? If we ourselves actually are not able to develop these qualities of Amrish, and we quarrel amongst each other, and we fight amongst each other, and we become obstacles to each other's service, that is also very, very dangerous and destructive. Right? So Prabhupada, I also gave the example in one letter of a bundle of sticks. If you have a bundle of sticks, then you can't break it. If you try to take it, you know, say like a bundle like this wide, you try to snap it, you're not going to be able to take it. But if you're able to take one of those sticks and remove it, to isolate it from all the other sticks, then very easily you can snap it. So in the same way, Maya can isolate us from each other. She can't break the bundle of sticks. This material world and all of its obstacles, they can't break this bundle of sticks. But if the bundle is able to be opened and spread out, then each one of those sticks can be stepped on and snapped very easily. Right? So it's very important that we also practice, we try not to become obstacles to each other. Right? We try to actually assist each other and cooperate to fulfill the mission of Lord Chaitanya. It is not that when the Krishna consciousness movement is perfect, there will be no conflict or there will be no disagreement. There's always disagreement, right? Because the individual jiva souls, even while serving together, they have different perspectives and ideas on how to serve Krishna. That's very natural. In the spiritual world, all the different living entities are serving Krishna with their own devotion. And Krishna's enjoying and relishing each of those things. It's just like if you go into the restaurant, there's not just one sabji there, right? There's just rice and sabji, or even just one sabji in a big tray that fills the entire steam table, right? It's not like that. There's variety, even the salad bar. People like it because there's variety. So Krishna also likes variety. He wants to taste the devotion of every single jiva. And every single jiva's devotion is individual, right? Simultaneously one and infinitely unique. So there may be conflict, and even in the highest levels of devotional service, we see the gopis in the spiritual world, they sometimes are in competition with each other. And Krishna enjoys this with great relish. But the difference is, unlike material consciousness, there's no envy. Right? Even though there may be conflict of opinion, there's no envy. They're not quarreling with each other out of ego. Yeah? There's many examples, for example, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, of devotees who they have difference of opinion. For example, Draupadi and Bhima. This is a very wonderful example. And what was the relationship between Draupadi and Bhima? They had a great relationship of affection. In fact, we've heard the story where Bhima Dev, when they were in the Himalayas, when the Pandavas, exile, were in the Himalayas, then one time Bhima and Draupadi were walking, and there was a beautiful heavenly flower that she had found on the ground, and she immediately, as you'll see in the relationship between husband and wife, she immediately said, "Bhima, get me another one of these flowers, right? I want this flower immediately. In fact, I want a whole bunch of these so I can bring back to Kamyavan, where we're staying." And so Bhima immediately took his mace and began walking up the path into the higher levels of the Himalayas, which are generally the regions where the heavenly beings and the yakshas and different siddhas and different charanas, gandharvas, these entities, it's kind of like their area, right? And so he just fearlessly marched into their area and found, the flowers were sort of flowing down this river, which eventually came to a lake. And, in the midst of this, he also met Hanuman. That's a different story. But he found all these flowers across the lake, and immediately he marched into the lake to grab these flowers, and he was assaulted by an army of yakshas who tried to stop him. They said, "This is Kuvera's lake. You can't take these." But determined to get these flowers for Draupadi, he actually fought off and defeated this entire army until Kuvera himself came and gave permission that you take these flowers. So their relationship was very together. They united together in Krishna's service with great affection. And yet, when the situation happened, the unfortunate situation at the end of the battle, when Ashvatthama had slain their children, had actually killed all the children of the Pandavas, and he was eventually captured by Arjuna and Krishna, right, and brought before Maharaj Yudhisthira and thrown down at his feet. And they were asking, essentially, what should we do with this rascal? And so Bhima immediately said, "Kill him." Right? And if it's, that's correct, according to the codes of Dharma, he could be killed. He's a murderer of children. It's a very heinous act. But Draupadi, she disagreed. She actually said, "No, he should be given mercy. He's the wife, or he's the son of our teacher, Dronacharya. He's a Brahmin. Even he may be a Brahma Bandhu, but still, he should be respected." Also, being a mother who has also lost children, she was concerned, that she didn't want his mother, Kripi, to experience the same suffering and pain. And therefore, coming from sort of the perspective of a woman, she wanted him to be given mercy, and also from her great Vaishnav compassion. So there was a disagreement between Bhima and Draupadi. And it went to Arjuna, "What should we do?" And Arjuna, he left it to Krishna. Just like Maharaj Ambarish, he has this mood of humility and dependence on Krishna. Arjuna, such a great personality. We can't even conceive what a great Vaishnava Arjuna is. And so in this love and affection for Krishna, he turned towards his beautiful friend Krishna and said, "You please solve this dilemma." And so Krishna, very expertly, just like in this situation with Durvasa Muni, he established his will. He figured out a way to harmonize these two different opposing perspectives. And therefore, Ashvatthama was humiliated, as Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, that for a kshatriya, dishonor is worse than death. Right? And so simultaneously, both things were fulfilled. He was sort of symbolically killed. His top knot was cut. He was sort of, his head was shaved or cut in a way that is a sign of great disrespect and humiliation for a kshatriya. And so in this way, he was killed, but at the same time, he was not killed. So Krishna, with his divine intelligence, can do wondrous and miraculous things. He can solve these conflicts in ways that we cannot imagine. But we have to get out of the way. We have to move our false ego out of the way. We have to develop this mood of dependence and tolerance and compassion. And also, there's the principle of working with higher authority. Another example of devotees, very exalted devotees, having a disagreement is with Narada Muni and Svayambhuva Manu. If you remember when Maharaj Priyavrat The Swayambhuva Manu had actually approached him and asked him that you please give up your vow of celibacy, right? He's meditating in the forest, and we need you to come and be the emperor of the world. And Maharaj Priyavrat was a disciple of Narada Muni, and Narada Muni was opposed to this. He was actually in conflict with Swayambhuva Manu. He's saying, no, this is not a good idea. You should stay fixed in your rigid vow of brahmacharya and practice, you know, and as you've been doing. So eventually, Lord Brahma became involved. Lord Brahma is the father, spiritual master of both Narada Muni and Swayambhuva Manu. And so when he descended, he essentially decided that Priyavrat should actually take the reins of the kingdom. So Narada Muni, we could see from his example, he immediately abandoned his particular perspective on what should be done. He didn't try to fight, like there are tendencies sometimes, at least my tendency, is that if we have a particular perspective on how things should be done and someone comes opposing us, then we usually react defensively, right? No, no, you know, my perspective is right. And we may even be right, right? From one perspective, we may be actually right. And so we may hold on to it intensely. And sometimes the mood of conquest, you know, we must actually win this fight. No one's going to push me around, you know, that type of thing. So that mentality can enter into us. Sometimes we can even meditate, you know, like say if we feel we've been offended, we meditate, ooh, this person is a great offender, right? They're going to get it. You just wait until Krishna takes revenge upon you for me, right? Anyone else think like that, or is it just me? Okay, so, so anyway, sometimes we can introduce our ego into the situation and we want revenge. Right? We want to win this fight, win this quarrel, and establish for all to see that we are correct. But, you see, Narada Muni, as soon as Lord Brahma came and told him what he wanted as the representative of Krishna, as the spiritual master, immediately Narada Muni just dropped everything and immediately accepted that. Right? There was no fight, there was no quarrel, because his motivation was never born out of false ego. His motivation was just to please Krishna. And because it was just to please Krishna, as soon as he saw a certain path which was clearly more pleasing to Krishna, then he immediately left aside what his intention was. You see? So these are all great examples of these qualities that we have to develop in order for Krishna to work in our life and in the situations, in order for Krishna to empower us to fulfill the order of our spiritual master. And so in conclusion, Ambarish Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada are great examples of this principle being mentioned here. That one will face opposition in this world. That opposition could come from many places. Envious people like Nair, Mr. Nair. We also see Prabhupada in India. He tried to establish the League of Devotees in Jhansi. There was so much opposition. Prabhupada faced opposition at every step. And yet, and also opposition even from within the Krishna consciousness movement, even from other devotees. And so Prabhupada always embodied this mood of great tolerance, great forgiveness and kindness and compassion, as well as always depending on Krishna, always praying to Krishna, never trying to do it himself, but fully seeing himself as only able to act as an instrument of Krishna if Krishna desires. And his only desire at all times is just to give satisfaction to Krishna and please Krishna. Okay, so it is now 8:50. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Are there any... Thank you. Are there any comments or questions? Bhaktavatar Prabhu?
Thank you for very ecstatic class. I guess that's the only way I can put it. But you mentioned during part of the class that it was dangerous for a person to become isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And what can we do? Do you have some suggestions for how we can actually motivate a person to become less isolated? Like when you see that someone's becoming you know, within himself and kind of isolated, and you're trying to bring him in, but he's resisting. Do you have some suggestions how we can motivate the person to be born?
Sure. Okay.
Outward?
Thank you very much, Prabhu. So how to help devotees who are becoming isolated. So I could just mention two things. Maybe other devotees have other things they'd like to say. So one is that as a group, as a community, just as I said here, we need to imbibe these particular qualities. If we have a very welcoming and kind environment where devotees feel protected and supported, then it's less likely people will become isolated. Right? They'll feel welcome to participate. Now, on the other hand, you know, people become isolated for their own reasons. And so just on a very practical level, if a devotee is sort of drifting away from sadhu sangha, it's drifting away from good association, generally means it's drifting into bad association. So we want to try to provide good association. But one sometimes has to be a little bit diplomatic about this. In other words, say, for example, you see a devotee that has not been around devotees for a while. So try to be very affectionate and kind. You don't immediately, you know, launch a barrage. Where have you been? Right? What are you doing? Out there enjoying Maya, are we? Right? You say something like, it's so nice to see you, Prabhu. How are you? And you don't say, where have you been? Or how long have you been gone? I haven't seen you in a while, Maya Devi. Right? You say, you know, my dear Prabhu, it's so nice to see you. It's been so long. Boy, we miss your association so much. And you can engage in the loving exchanges, as Prabhupada gives us in the Isha Upanishad. That one can give the person prasadam, try to give them a gift, try to encourage an individual to reveal their mind in Krishna confidence, or in Krishna consciousness, and to also to assist them in that way. Archita Prabhu, you'd have something you'd like to add?
Prabhupada said on this particular point, if somebody leaves, we should see it as 50% our fault, meaning those who remain behind, and 50% their fault. So sometimes, in spite of your best efforts, somebody will leave, and they will learn in the school of hard knocks. I have an example from San Diego. There was a very nice young man came in, and within no time became, you know, seemed to be pretty very advanced. But he developed this bad habit of criticizing superiors. He always thought that they weren't doing the right thing, and this and that. And so he got to the point where he just couldn't stay in the community anymore. So he left. Then a few years later at a Sunday feast, he shows up. And I said, oh, just like you did. I said, oh, Haribol, I haven't seen you in a long time. What's going on? So he confessed. He said that, you know, he went out to the desert of Arizona by himself to chant Hare Krishna and live his lifestyle. And in the beginning, it was going all right. And then Maya Devi sent her army, or in the form of one young lady who just dragged him completely away from his practice. And after he got kicked around for 2 years, he realized that he really missed the devotees and the temple life and everything. So he came back.
Yeah, thank you, Prabhu. Krishna will teach us one way or another, right? Is there anyone else who would like to make a comment? No? Okay, thank you very much. All glories, Prabhupada. All right.
That is Mahalwa.